The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC Podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to 2025, and this is the first episode of this season for the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and once again, welcoming you and thanking you for your continued support of this this broadcast. All right, then. So we are in 2025. Before we go, obviously, a little bit further, obviously, I have, for those of you that know me well enough, that have subscribed to my Facebook or what have you, will know that I became a US citizen, towards the end of January. So this is the first time that this broadcast will have a British American element to it. No real reason for mentioning that. I mean, it is quite a significant moment in my life personally, and I just wanted to share that with you good folks. But at the time that we're doing this podcast, we're in the middle of the IWWF World University Championships, which has attracted quite a few competitors and nations across the world, United States, Italy, to name a couple. But there is one team over there that kind of surprised me a little bit with their presence in this competition, the nation of Japan. And you know, when I come to think about it, I know that that Japan has a very strong presence in collegiate water skiing, maybe not so much on the international level, but on a national collegiate level. And their participation, their existence as collegiate water ski teams actually predates the United States by several years. So to kind of discuss that a little bit and a little bit more about Japanese water skiing is a good friend of mine from Japan, who's been involved in the sport for quite a few many years, at least 15, I would say, close to 15, between 10 to 15 years. His name is Ryuta Funo, and welcome, sir. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you, Tony. I'm doing good. My name is Ryota Funo from Japan, and I'm very happy to be here with you, Tony. I've been watching your TWBC webcast all the time, and I'm always happy to like watching pro events through your channel. And yeah, thank you for inviting me today.
Not a problem at all. It's great to have you here. And I mean, you've been a fan of the sport for so long. I mean those of you that have scoured YouTube or Facebook or Instagram or anything like that, and looking for content so far as water ski photos as concerned, you don't have to look very far to see this guy's work. You know, he's done some fantastic work. I mean, even the last couple of days, he's been out the lake here at Bennett's on Lake 2, which is the slalom lake, and taking some really, really gorgeous shots of Aaron Davies as he gets ready for this season. So your passion for photography and doing that kind of stuff, how did that kind of get going?
My photography, actually, I was an exchange student in 2010 to 2011. I studied abroad in Austin, Texas for a year when I was a high school kid. And my host dad was a photographer.
Wow.
So I was playing with his camera, and then he taught me how to use it, how to set it. And from that, after I came back to Japan, I got my own camera and then playing with it. And then that's the how I started.
Okay. Okay, so kind of going back a little bit further, how did you get involved in the sport of tournament water ski? And everyone has their own different story type deal, and stories of people getting involved in the sport of this sport from countries outside of the United States or from the regular countries such as Italy, United Kingdom. You know, I mean their start for the most part is basically family based. Is that about the same in Japan or for yourself personally?
I started water skiing when I entered my university, which is called Meiji Gakuin University. And after entering my university, my friend invited me to a dinner with a water ski club.
Mm-hmm.
And then there the club members showed me the videos and the photos, and then I learned about water skiing for the first time. I mean, I didn't even know water ski club exists in Meiji Gakuin University.
Mm-hmm.
So I was not interested in any water skiing before I entering my university. But after saw some videos and then photos and then talks with club members, and then I got very interested in it. So after a few days, they had some trial session, like
a tryout.
Trial, yeah. Like they invited me to a club activity, and then I tried to ride a jump skis. Like, fortunately, I got up on the water on the first try, and then riding jump skis a little bit, and that was like the time on the water was just so much fun, so like it was just amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I chose to become a member of the water ski club. That was the 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, that was 2013.
Now you're probably one of the very few skiers in Japan that I know of that actually got into this level of the sport, having actually learned how to ski and be competitive on the collegiate circuit. Because the skiers that I know from Japan, such as Saya and Haru and I'm trying to think of someone else. Joe Nakamura.
He's new.
Yeah, he's relatively new.
Saya, Harue, and who else?
Masako's kid. Kohei Yamaguchi.
Yes.
Yeah, Kohei Yamaguchi.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's definitely a character. And they had different starts into the sport aside from university. So I mean, you're probably one of the few that have actually gone that route into the sport. So you're unique in that respect. So how do the majority of people in Japan get into the sport of tournament water skiing at the level that you and they have achieved outside of the university universe?
Like how they got involved in the
yeah
it's pretty much the same. 99% of us starts water skiing when they entering the university. So April, we have a recruiting season for
uh-huh.
freshmen. So we like freshmen are going to many clubs to like to see and which clubs they want to join.
Uh-huh.
And the all of the university has a like a trial like
yeah.
on the weekends. So they go to the trial and then try some water skiing on the jump skis. So if they got interested in,
then
yeah, they join.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I was very like, interested in was like, I was talking with the woman who used to be the national team, water ski national team.
Uh-huh.
She taught me that if you want to be the number one in Japan, this is the one.
This is the way
to join. Because everyone starts from
the university.
The university, right?
Okay, so probably fair to say that there isn't too much of a youth development program in Japan, you know, where you've got like the little kids, you know, and going through a junior development and go from there, which is in stark contrast to a lot of other places across the world. I mean, in the regional development across the United States, they have like junior development, you know, starting with like little kids and going out through teenagers and that kind of stuff. So that doesn't exist so much in Japan, or
I don't think so. No, because like Japan is not a flat country. You know, there's so many like mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not like we don't go to the lake. On a boat on a weekend, so it's like having fun on the boat is not in our culture, you know.
Okay.
So
you see, this is news to a lot of people, you know, because a lot of people listening here, you know, are probably looking forward to going out there this weekend as the weather starts to heat up a little bit. I mean, we're talking to you from Zachary, Louisiana, which is home at Bennett's World Ski School. And, you know, there are people that are living like significantly more north than us that are still getting snowed under a little bit right now, but they still harbor ambitions of getting that boat out and getting it out, de-winterize mm-hmm. the boat and getting ready to ski if they haven't already done so. But, not so much in Japan, no.
Not so much in Japan. I mean, very few people that do, but for me, I didn't even know water skiing, competitive water skiing exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay. All right, then. So, kind of, I mean, the reason why you're here and the reason why our ski school students are here right now, I mean, we got about 24... collegiate skiers from Japan here at Bennett's Water Ski School right now, you know, just getting trained and getting ready for the April portion of mm-hmm. the intercollegiate season.
Yep.
And we'll explain a little bit more what the collegiate calendar is so far as that is concerned. I mean, you mentioned April, but the collegiate national championships are in the fall, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and around about September. And I think that the season goes as far as November before it shuts down. And I'm sure it gets incredibly cold in Japan.
Yes.
So
yeah.
So it's
so we have a short season.
So
our water ski season in Japan starts from about April till end of November. So,
mm-hmm.
like 8 months.
Eight months.
Eight months. And then for the collegiate water skiing, they have four big tournaments during the season.
Mm-hmm.
We have the first one is going to be it's called Water Ski Champion Series 1.
Okay.
And it's going to be end of March. No, end of May. Sorry.
End of May.
And Champion Series 2 is going to be 1 month later.
And in June.
In June, yeah, end of June. And the third one is going to be the Collegiate Nationals, which is going to be the first week of September.
Okay. So how many collegiate programs are we talking about? You know, I mean, the Collegiate Nationals in the United States, their national championship has about 12 teams in each division, Division 1, Division 2. But being as the collegiate water skiing in Japan has been in existence longer than it has been in the United mm-hmm. States, there must obviously be a lot of universities involved in the national championship series.
Right now, we have 9 different college team in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be more. I don't know how many exactly, but it used to be more. But right now, we have 9 different university team. And every single tournament, we gather and then compete.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone competes. So we don't have any like prelims or finals. Just 1 day only.
I mean,
day 1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. Yeah, like so Friday, trick, Saturday, Sunday.
Right. Trick, slalom, jump.
And okay.
That's it. We don't have any prelims and then finals.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right then. So how's the kind of team structured, you know, because you know in the United States just for the sake of comparison to kind of familiarize you a little bit to what already exists in this part of the world, and I'm sure this probably goes over the heads of a lot of people in Europe, but for the sake of those listening in from the United States, they know that in the collegiate water skiing, you have 5 rotations in each event. You know, whether it'll be men's or women's slalom, men's or women's tricks, men's or women's jump. You know, 5 rotations and the top four of those 5 scores from each team get pulled into a total. So is the system in Japan very similar to that? Like 10 points for every position above last, or is it kind of like IWWF style scoring?
I think it's different from United States collegiate water skiing, and we have it's kind of oh this is difficult to explain for me.
Okay, try us.
The first one, the first place skier gets 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
And oh my!
if the second skier gets half as much,
he gets 500.
Okay, so yeah, 500. So like so yeah, so if the winner gets 30, it has 36 buoys, then someone who scored half as much has got 180 buoys, then that person at the top is 1,000 points overall mm-hmm. points, and the one halfway down is 500 points.
Yeah.
So it is in essence IWWF style scoring.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So how many team skiers in each team in each event contribute, or first of all, in each event, what's the maximum amount of skiers you can have on a collegiate team for each event, each gender?
For right now, 4 men's and 3 women's.
Okay.
Yeah, 4 men's skiers and then 3 women's skiers. And then top 3 men's skiers and top 2 women skiers.
Okay, so you drop the so each team drops the lowest score in each event.
Right, that's
right. Okay, mm-hmm. Okay, that's fairly similar. That in that respect, it's very similar to the collegiate nationals, the NCAA system. So you mentioned about recruiting, we mentioned about team skiing and that kind of stuff. So how long has Japanese collegiate skiing been involved, you know? Because, I mean, I spoke to a number of people, you know, when I started collegiate water skiing, for those of you who don't know, I actually skied for the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette, you know, in the late part of the 1990s, early 2K. And was actually privileged to welcome some Japanese students to actually observe our system and what have you at UL in the late 1990s, and it's certainly a different system, and they told me that that collegiate skiing in Japan has been around for a lot longer than it's been in the United mm-hmm. States. So kind of detail that a little bit, if you could.
I am not sure how all water skiing in Japan started, but my team established in 1967.
What?
And
1960?
Yeah.
Late 19...
And it's going to be 70th year in 2027, so 2 years later.
Yeah, they were listening to the 70th. They were listening to the Beatles, you know, whenever collegiate skiing started in Japan. I mean,
yeah, it's so quite long. And then every university team established like around the same time, like 1967, and yeah, other team. It's going to be like 65th year or around 70th year.
You couldn't even begin to imagine what equipment that they had at their disposal at that time. Wooden skis, wooden trick skis, yeah. Wooden slalom skis. Uh-huh. You know, the boats probably weren't all that great either.
I think so.
You know, so just.
But yeah, it has a long, long history. Yes. And we just had a collegiate national last year. That was
with that many skiers, that many teams, you know, a 9-team collegiate nationals with 4 scoring skiers, and you know, with the scoring skiers, I mean, 4 competing, 3 contributing in the men's, and 3 skiing, 2 contributing for the women's. You know, that sounds like a pretty stacked event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and it's for next year. It's the collegiate nationals. Is going to be a 70th college national water skiing.
70th.
Yeah.
Wow.
Last year 69th, and then next year 70th.
Wow.
So it's gonna be a long history.
I might have to go over that and check that out. I mean, that's gonna be in September. So we kind of mentioned a little bit about collegiate water skiing in Japan, because obviously the work that I'm currently doing right now with a lot of the collegiate students here, you know, is continuing to be ongoing. So as a collegiate water skiing athlete in Japan, what kind of challenges do they face going back to their country? You know, because you've got to imagine and understand that in Japan, they don't have like man-made lakes, you know, every 200 to 300 miles on average, as you would think in the United States and some other countries around the world. So getting on water time is challenging at best, right?
Very challenging. Especially for my team, My university was located in Yokohama, which is very close to Tokyo. But my home ski site was in a river, which is called Tone River. And that was very, very far from my campus. And every Friday night after my class, I went to the station straight from my classroom and then take a 3 hours and a 15 minutes train ride to get to the closest station of my home site. And then we have a...
Was it the regular train or the Shinkansen?
A regular train.
Okay.
Regular train.
So not bullet train or anything
like that?
No, no.
But 3 hours. 3 hours of train ride every Friday night after the class. And then get to the ski site. And then our team owns a little house that we can stay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my team start practice skiing from the sunrise till the sunset.
Sunset, yeah.
Yeah.
Sun up, sun down.
Mm-hmm. So, first, it's my home ski site is so, so far away. We have to take 3 hours of train ride every Friday night and then come back on the Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the day, weekdays, we have classes and then doing some part-time jobs to get some money. And then, yeah, we can only practice on the weekends. For my team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously the academics has to come before and, you know, and,
right.
I mean, as the same as it is in the United States, you know. But from what I understand as well, obviously a lot of sites are public water.
Yes, it is public water. Public lake in Japan.
Yeah, no private lake in Japan, which is a pity, except maybe for... semi-private, you know, like Akita, that had the last time.
Yeah, semi-private. It's still the public, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the last times that FISU actually had the World University Championship was in Akita in Japan, and a lot of people came away with fond memories of that event.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
Yes, but... A lot of sites in Japan, almost exclusively the sites in Japan, are public water, and like the government authorities there have to kind of tell you a little bit what they're going to do with the lake level and that kind of stuff, you know, because sometimes that it's reservoir, you know, it's like dams and stuff like that, you know. So if it starts raining and stuff like that, and like they're anticipating the deluge, you've got to act pretty quickly to get that ramp out the water and preserve what your course is like there, right?
There is one place, which is called Yabake Aqua Park. That's located in Kyushu, which is a south island of Japan.
A Honshu?
Kyushu. Kyushu, yes. Very south island of Japan. And that place, that site, is in a big dam surrounded by the mountains. And then every summer, they get lots of rain, like typhoons and then rains. And then sometimes after the typhoon hit the lake, 10 meters, the water level is going to rise, like 10 meters.
And just to kind of clarify it, the typhoon is basically just another word for hurricane. Hurricanes occur in the Western Hemisphere, and typhoons are there. Are their counterparts that take place in Southeast Asia and Japan, as you continue to tell us a little bit more about.
Yeah. And then, when the typhoon hits us or when we get lots of rain, the water level rises like 10 meters. Like not always, but raises very quick and then a lot, like 10 meters. And then after the typhoon season, we're going to have a dry season, like much, much less rain. And then water level goes down. And 10 meters again, like up and down.
Wow.
So they have to adjust the course, the jump ramp, and the dock.
And 10 meters, for those of you that are wondering in terms of feet, I mean, we're talking close to 40 feet, yeah. So far as bottom to top, so, mm-hmm. so far as differential.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's the one thing which is like a very difficult to deal with. Like mm-hmm. rain. Yeah.
Yeah, just being able to keep the courses in check and everything, you know. And you know what I noticed with the students that have come here so far as their equipment goes. I mean, it's not easy to obtain like the latest and greatest equipment so far as new slalom skis and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And I see a lot of jump skis and slalom skis that I've seen on other people's feet before yes. over the years. Kind of mm-hmm. kind of tell us a little bit about that situation.
Yeah, we don't. We don't have like a pro shop in Japan, like a water ski pro shop in Japan, so we have to import. Or right now we have a Kohei's water ski shed.
Uh-huh.
Like we can buy like a D3 or KD skis from him. But like pro shop, like the pro shop in the Bennett's,
yeah,
we don't have that at all, so we have to import from the US or France or Australia. So it's going to be very tough to get the new equipment for us. And it's going to be very expensive as well because of the taxes mm-hmm. and the shipping cost.
Yeah.
So we have to take care of our equipment very well. So many of the ski members can use it like years and years.
Kind of like hand-me-downs a little bit, you know, from one generation to the next. Now, one thing that kind of occurred to me a little bit is, I mean, when you look back and it's surprising, and we're in 2025 and like the whole world stopped 5 years ago for the COVID, you know, and that probably devastated a lot of people across the world. But so far as Southeast Asia, Japan are concerned, They really took a beating at that time, and I'm sure that the tournament skiing and that kind of stuff really had to take a back seat at that time, right?
Mm-hmm. For the most of the team, the university stopped their club activities.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they couldn't even practice at all for like long time, so that was a very tough time for us. And especially my ski team, when I was a senior, we had 20 skiers in the team, but after COVID, because of the COVID, the club members are leaving. Many club members left the team
to go into isolation.
Then when the time the COVID hits us, there were 3 left in
wow.
the team.
Oh my word. I mean,
so that was a very tough time for my team, but same thing kind of happened to other teams because the university never let us practice, like like they told us not to spread the COVID to like a countryside or to the to other people.
Yeah,
you
just
know?
Just kind of a quarantine containment.
Mm-hmm. So that was a very tough time. But still, we barely managed to have collegiate nationals.
September of 2020.
September, yeah. But no, that was in, I think that was in October, but that was just no, like, we had to wear a mask and then keep the social distance, and then that was just, we had the collegiate nationals, but that was whole different.
It was just a completely different dynamic, yeah. You know?
That was sad, but that's we could do.
Yeah. Okay. And like beyond the scope of collegiate water skiing in Japan, it also affected the participation of a lot of countries in Southeast Asia, Malaysia, Chinese Taipei, and Japan,
yeah,
from competing in the IWWF World Water Ski Championships in 2021. You know, so those teams couldn't make it across, and 2 years after that, the participation of countries from that area of the world hadn't really fully recovered. But hopefully this year, do you anticipate Japan being able to field a halfway decent team to compete in Italy this coming summer?
I hope so. But there is one big problem. It's going to be in September, right?
Yeah, it's going to be late August, early part of September. If I double check my schedule.
Thinking
here
about that time, we have a collegiate national, so like a very good collegiate water skiers is not going to be. Is they cannot be in the team because they have to ski for the collegiate nationals.
Yeah, the World Championships are scheduled between Tuesday the 26th and Sunday the 31st of August. So, that's going to be tight. Yeah, in August. Yeah, because they actually changed the date.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, they changed it. You know, to make sure that it coincided more smoothly and more efficiently with some of the pro tournaments that took place before and the one or two that come afterwards as well.
Okay, that's okay. I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah.
So yeah, many good water skier from the collegiate team is going to be the national. Some of them are going to be a national team. So okay.
Okay. Yeah. So it's possible.
Yeah, I hope some like Yu Nagatomo or Ryo Nagatomo, who is just skiing in University World right now.
Uh huh.
They can. Yeah, they might be. They might want to be in the national team for the Worlds in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a good thing.
And you know, an array of light so far as Japan is concerned, I mean, took place last year over at the U17 Worlds that took place in Calgary. Mm-hmm. A young skier,
Joe Nakamura,
yeah. You know, who's actually quite impressive in the jump event, but he is very, very good in the tricks event. I think he actually made the final in the tricks event, right?
Mm-hmm. He's very good. Yeah.
But his path into the sport was a lot different to collegiate skiing.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I mentioned, the Yabake Aqua Park, which is in the Kyushu, South Island. He is from that city.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yabake Aqua Park is located in Nakatsu City. And then Joe Nakamura is from Nakatsu City. So the water skiing is kind of very close to him, you know.
Yeah.
The familiar with water skiing since he was since he was a child. And then his dad is also a college water skier, and then he is still skiing. His name is Daigo Nakamura, and he was a great, great water skier in Japan. He was the very first person who jumped over 50 meters.
Wow.
And his first son is the Joe Nakamura, and Joe started skiing when he was a 3, I think.
Mm.
And then just keep skiing, and until now, and then he just skiing incredible right now. He just broke the trick, Japan trick record 2 years ago at the Nationals, which was set by, I forgot the name, but Mr. Kurisawa, and that was 20 years.
20 years ago.
20 years ago. After 20 years, finally Joe broke the trick record.
Wow.
Yeah, so he's getting better and better skier right now. And I think last year he skied with a Scott Ellis.
Yeah, I believe he trains over with...
And then he made it to
the trick.
Junior Masters.
Yeah, he did that. He did that as well. I remember that quite vividly as well. Although competing in there didn't quite turn out the way that he would have wanted, you know. But we anticipate him possibly being in the World Championships that we mentioned, the Open Worlds, but also the U21 Worlds that take place over in Calgary. So an opportunity for him there to actually compete again on familiar water.
I'm sure he is going to go to the U21.
And what about yourself? Do you harbor ambitions of being on Team Japan for the Open Worlds?
Yeah, I hope I can be in the team, but I'm not sure yet. But yeah, I really wanna be the national team again and then ski and then Italy, because I've never been to Italy. But yeah, I hope I can. Yeah, but I just not sure yet.
All right then. So I never really dealt too far into what you actually do for a living in Japan. You've obviously having to take a few weeks away to not only train and get ready for the season, but also kind of liaise a little bit between the Japanese students here and the instructors over here at Bennett's. But that's not your bread and butter so far as being able to sustain a living, right?
Once again, I mean,
what do you do to make money in Japan?
It's very complicated, and let's just not talk about it.
All right.
I had a job, but I'm just changing my job.
Okay, you're so, in between jobs. You're
like a gap time. You know.
Okay, I get you.
I took some few months break time, so I had a chance to come here and then train again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But I'm gonna change my job, and then start it from April after I get back to Japan.
Yeah, around about the time that the collegiate start of the collegiate season in Japan goes. So, all right then, we've had a good little conversation here to start off the 2025 season of the TWBC podcast. Thanking you, Ryota, for your
Thank you, Tony.
For your participation. Is there anything you want to say in closing to the fans out there and want to say thanks to whomever?
Well, I mean, of course, thank you to my family first, because they supported me a lot when I was a student. And and thanks to Jay Bennett, because I skied out here at Bennett's for like 4 years in a row during winter, and then he supported me very well, and then my skiing improved so well here when I was here. And yeah, I want to thank you to all the people who ski with me and my friends, ski mates, I mean my friend, and lots of students. And
so many people to mention. Uh-huh. You know, it's hard to draw upon everyone, but let's just say anyone that know anyone that knows you, you know, give them thanks, you know, and because they've all contributed in some way or form. So that has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast as we continue to roll around and towards the 200th episode or so of this podcast. Thank you very much, Ryota.
Thank you.
And we're already in the process of setting up the latest podcast episode, but in a little bit of a change to the regular out greeting, I will say sayonara for now.
Sayonara. Arigatou.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.